A man of Italian descent had long dreamed of going to Italy, going to Rome, and going to see the Pope. He saved his money a long time, and just before he took his trip, he went to the barber shop to get a haircut. He was telling the barber all about the trip, and his excitement about it, and his enthusiasm about it, and the barber asked, "How are you going to get to Italy?" And the man replied, "I'm flying Alitalia Airlines." And the barber said, "Forget it. They've got a terrible reputation. You'll be sorry." And then he asked him, "So where are you staying?" And the man said, "Well, I'm staying at the Hilton in Rome." And the barber just shook his head and groaned and said, "Forget it. They've got terrible service. So what are you going to do when you get there?" The man replied, "Well, I'm going to see the Pope." And the barber just shook his head more and laughed. Then he said, "Forget it. Forget it. You'll never see him. He only sees important people. You're wasting your time." Well, about a month went by, and the man came back into the barber shop, and the barber just kind of chuckled, and he said, "So, I bet you never got to Italy." The man replied, "Actually, I flew Alitalia Airlines, and they were just wonderful to me. And when I got to Rome, I stayed in the Rome Hilton, and they treated me like I was a king." Well, the barber was kind of put down by that, and he said, "So, what did you do when you got to Rome?" The man replied, "Well, I went to see the Pope." And the barber asked him impatiently, "Well, what happened?" And the man said, "Well, I knelt down and I kissed the Pope's ring." And the barber said, "You kissed the Pope's ring? What did he say?" The man said, "Well, the Pope looked down at me and said, 'Son, where did you get that terrible haircut?'" I guess discouragement is one of those things that goes around, doesn't it? The last few weeks, we thought about the need that all of us have for encouragement. We looked at poor and good attempts to offer encouragement. And we've been reminded that the greatest encouragement that we'll ever have has come from God. It's based upon what God has done and what God continues to do in our lives. We recognize that we must constantly encourage one another, spiritually and otherwise, but above all, spiritually. We've examined how we can be discouraged as a body of believers and what we need to do to encourage one another and to be encouraged individually. We saw that we're encouraged by faith-filled leaders and by one another and by God's actions. And so to close this series tonight, we're going to look at the kind of encouragement that spiritual leaders need and where it comes from. Numbers chapters 13 and 14 tell what happened the first time the Israelites reached the border of the promised land, Canaan. If you remember, they had escaped from Egypt. God had carried them all the way through. Set up camp at the foot of Mount Sinai, and God had given them his covenant and his law. And now they were at the borders of Canaan for the first time. They had traveled from Egypt to these borders in roughly 18 months, we think. Well, you know how the story goes if you've read it or heard it before. Chapter 13 tells about how God told Moses to send a representative from each one of the 12 tribes as spies into the land, to check it out and report back to the people. So Moses chose one leader from every one of the 12 tribes, and he sent them in with the orders that they were to look over the land and that they were to report back. And Moses was excited. He was encouraged. 18 months in, and this massive group of people were already at the borders of Canaan. And so, as the story goes, they went into the land, and they were gone about 40 days. They come back, and they're bearing fruit from the land. And they show this to the assembled people. It's not just to Moses that they're reporting and to Aaron, but all the people are assembled around. They're excited. They're anticipating. And they don't know what kind of report they're going to get. But the 12 spies say, "This land was more even than what God has told us. It was better than we could have imagined." And they go on to tell about how fruitful it was and what a wonderful land it was. And then comes in verse 26, the but. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites lived in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites lived in the hill country. And the Canaanites lived near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They're stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." We talked last week about discouragers. Boy, these people, these 10 out of the 12, are discouragers par excellence. And remember, they're not just saying this in the privacy of speaking to Moses and Aaron. All the people are around. They hear this. This is a public kind of report. And as we read in there, we find that the people were so discouraged about this that they began talking about getting rid of Moses and Aaron. In fact, chapter 14, in verses 1 through 11, says, "That night all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, 'If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?' And they said to each other, 'We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt.' Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, 'The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them.' But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. The Lord said to Moses, 'How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the miraculous signs I have performed among them?'" I don't know about you, but every time I read that story, one of the first things that comes to my mind is, thank God I was not among the Israelites at that point. What powerful negative effects 10 men, just 10 men, had on a group of 3 to 6 million people. They don't even amount to 0.1%. 10 men impacted 3 to 6 million people negatively. Imagine, if it's even possible, how discouraged Moses was. Imagine at the same time, on the other side of that, how proud he was of Joshua. It's clear right here why Joshua will become the next leader of Israel. But consider this. For their lack of faith in God, and for discouraging God's leaders and God's people, the Israelites spent the next 40 years wandering in the desert. In 18 months from Egypt to the border of Canaan, they could have been inside. But because of 10 discouragers, they would spend 40 years before they would ever see that border again. Leaders need encouragement. They need it, first of all, from God. But they also need it from people who ought to follow the leaders. And leaders, in turn, need to encourage their followers. And they need to encourage those who will be leaders in the future. God charged Moses to encourage his replacement, Joshua. And in Deuteronomy chapter 31, in verses 1 through 8, we read what Moses did shortly before he died to encourage Israel and to encourage Joshua. Then Moses went out and spoke these words to all Israel. I am now 120 years old, and I am no longer able to lead you. The Lord has said to me, you shall not cross the Jordan. The Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you will take possession of their land. Joshua also will cross over ahead of you, as the Lord said. And the Lord will do to them what he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites whom he destroyed along with their land. The Lord will deliver them to you, and you must do to them all that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their forefathers to give them, and you must divide it among them as their inheritance. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. If you look there and just listen to it, you find that what Moses said to Israel and what Moses said to Joshua are similar, but slightly different. Moses said only to Joshua, who would be their leader, do not be discouraged. Leaders become discouraged when people who should be following them fight them. And you know, fighting doesn't have to be physical. Sometimes the worst kind of fighting is verbal. Moses had experienced that kind of fighting against his leadership several times in the course of his leadership of Israel. And more importantly, so had God. Spiritual leaders cannot punish people who divide and discourage and destroy God's people. But God will. Later in their desert wanderings, the people again grumbled against Moses. In anger and in discouragement, Moses disobeyed God. If you read from Exodus, from the beginning of the time that Moses began leading the people of Israel, on through the end of Numbers, you understand how weary and how disgusted Moses was with his people. You understand how he got to this point that he did, where he disobeyed God. And you have to ask yourself, who of us would have done as well as he did, as long as he did? Who of us wouldn't have cracked sooner? But because Moses disobeyed God, as God's chosen leader, as the man who above all men was to exemplify godliness in his life and faith in God in his life, God brought Moses' leadership and life to an end. In Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 37, Moses told Israel, because of you, the Lord became angry with me. Now we can say, well, Moses is trying to pass off the blame here. Because after all, it was Moses who took the act. It was Moses who disobeyed God. But what Moses is really saying is, folks, you drove me to this. This was not an isolated incident. This was years. This was decades of putting up with your, you fill in the blank.
He wanted the people that he had led to realize the effects of their discouragement on him. This was their pattern. Not once in 40 years did they thank or encourage Moses for his leadership. The people who grumbled against Moses had no faith. They had no faith in God, and they had no faith in God's chosen leader. So, as Moses' life and leadership came to an end, and as Joshua had been chosen by God to take Moses' place, God knew that Joshua would need encouragement as he took the leadership of Israel. Have you ever thought about what that would have looked like to Joshua? From early on, as they left Egypt, and Joshua became this second man, this right-hand man to Moses, he had been there with Moses through everything. He'd been there every time that Israel had grumbled against Moses and Aaron. Every time the people sinned. Every time they wanted to replace Moses. Every time that they were discouraging to Moses. Every time that Moses went to God and interceded for Israel. Every time Joshua had seen it all. Can you imagine taking on leadership of Israel after you had seen how Moses had been treated? Can you imagine Moses, as his life is coming to an end, and as another leader has to be chosen, Moses saying, "Everybody out there who would like to lead this people, put up your hand." Oh, I just bet about every man would want to do that, wouldn't they? Not. So as God handed the leadership over to Joshua, Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 9 says this, God speaking, "No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." When Joshua heard that, what did he think? We can only imagine. And we can only kind of superimpose our own thoughts on that, whether they're positive or negative. Can't you just see Joshua, though, saying, "Well, you know, I have a lot of faith in God. I had faith, you know, all these years ago that God would take us into that land. But I wasn't in Moses' position at that point in time, and now I am. I don't know. I'm taking on this mantle of leadership that Moses had. I don't know. You're not going to leave me? You're not going to forsake me? Well, I want to believe that, Lord, but I don't know." And then when Joshua gives the order to get ready to enter Canaan, some of the Israelites gave him the encouragement that every leader of God's people longs to hear. It comes up later in that same chapter, in Joshua chapter 1, and verses 16 through 18. "Then they answered Joshua, 'Whatever you have commanded us to do, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey your words, whatever you may command them, will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous.'" Wow. Wow. Wouldn't an eldership in a congregation love to hear those words? Leader, we're with you.
No matter what it is, no matter what you say, no matter where you want us to go, we're with you. And if anybody doesn't go with you, we'll kill them. Only be strong and courageous. These terms that we've heard tonight and that we heard last week are these same terms that are repeated often in the Old Testament in Israel's history. And the ideas are expressed also in the New Testament. God's leaders must remember that God goes before them and he will be with them. They must remember that God will never leave or forsake his leaders. They must remember that they must not be afraid or discouraged, whoever or whatever they come up against. As Paul wrote in Romans chapter 8 and verse 31, if God is for us, who can be against us? So leaders at the very outset, whether it's with Joshua or whether it's down through time into our time, leaders have God's encouragement first and foremost. But leaders also need encouragement from the people who should be following them. Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verses 12 through 13, now we ask you, brothers, to respect those who work hard among you, who are over you in the Lord, and who admonish you. Hold them in the highest regard in love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. The writer of Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17 instructs Christians, obey your leaders and submit to their authority. They keep watch over you as men who must give an account. Obey them so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no advantage to you. We must encourage our leaders for two reasons. Two very practical reasons. Two very almost mercenary reasons. The first is when we've got a leader who's a good leader, a godly leader, we need to encourage him to keep him as a leader. And the second reason is we need to encourage the leaders we have, if they're good and godly leaders, so that we can have more leaders. Many men will not consider becoming a leader in Christ's church because of the discouragement they hear from men who have served as leaders in Christ's church. May I be just blunt and straightforward? Part of the reason we don't have elders today is because there are men in this congregation who are qualified, but they're not sure that they want to take on the responsibilities of being a leader, an elder in this congregation, because of discouragement from people who should be following. Not just in their own experience, but in what they've heard. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I'm just saying this is a reality. And it's not just a reality here. We must encourage our leaders to lead us forward in faith in God, even if that leading is uncomfortable to us. We can encourage our leaders by complimenting their Christ-like attitudes, their Christ-like conversation, and their Christ-like work. We must encourage them by supporting them and by encouraging our fellow Christians to support them. We must encourage them by respecting them and by obeying them and by praying for them. If we do these, we will make their job a joy and not a burden. And we will have more leaders, more good and godly leaders. Just as God encouraged Joshua, we must encourage our leaders to obey, to speak, and to meditate on God's word, to be strong and courageous, and to be assured of God's presence, provision, and powerful help. A thought for us to keep in mind is that encouraged leaders encourage their followers. Encouraged leaders encourage their followers. it becomes an unending cycle. Encouraged leaders encourage their followers, who in turn encourage their leaders, who in turn encourage their followers. And the more encouragement that goes on, the greater that encouragement gets, and the greater sense of strength and courage the leaders have. And the greater sense that they have of those things, the greater sense of faith the congregation has in their leaders. Imagine with me for just a moment. Imagine we were at a point where we have elders who are good and godly men, who are living in faith of God, who are strong and courageous, who pray incessantly and seek God's guidance in everything of any consequence at all, particularly as it relates directly to the congregation. And imagine they've created this environment where they have an open door and the congregation wants to come in and speak to them and feels free to and feels like they can do that and be encouraged. And imagine a member a couple of years down road from now comes into the leaders or to one of the leaders maybe right after morning worship and says, you know, I've been thinking about a ministry I really believe our congregation should be involved in, and I'd really like to talk with you about it. And so they talk for a few minutes, and this elder says, you know, you've got something of validity there. What I'd like you to do is kind of flesh this out a little bit more, put a little bit more meat on the bones of the idea, and then come in and speak to the elders as a group. You'll be well received. And a few weeks later, that brother or sister does that. They come in and they share their idea. They've looked at it a variety of ways. They've answered the questions. They come in and present it. And the elders say, that has merit. That's something that we could get behind. But brother, sister, let us do something first. Give us 3 months to pray intensively to God about this. Let us seek God's guidance. So it's not our ideas. It's God's idea. It's not what we think is right. It's what God thinks is right. And in 3 months, we'll come back to you, and we'll talk further. And so they do. The elders commit themselves to prayer, significant, intensive prayer, earnest prayer about this issue, along with other issues they're already praying about. They keep it on the forefront of their thoughts, of their prayers. And they call this brother or sister back in 3 months to join them in conversation. And they say, you know, we believe that God is leading us to do that. We want to ask you to take charge of that. We want to support you in every way that we can. We want to encourage you. And we'll announce this to the congregation. And so that next Sunday morning, they get up. And they say, this brother, this sister has come to us with this idea. And they've looked at it very thoroughly. They've answered all the questions. We've prayed about it for 3 solid months, urgently, earnestly. And we believe this has merit and that we, at this time, ought to step into this. We believe God is saying, this is the time. This is the ministry. And we don't know exactly how this is going to work. We've not done this before. And we don't know where the resources are going to come from this, whether they're human resources or financial resources or other resources. But we believe this. We believe a brother was touched, that he was somehow led by the Holy Spirit to this idea, and we believe we were led by God to step into this. And we're going to trust God that if this is his leading, he will provide the way for it to happen in his time, in his ways. And so we ask you to get behind this, not because it's our idea or this person's idea, but because this is of God's leading. And then they push forward. Now, you know, in a longer period of time, that's what the leaders of this congregation have done, and that's what's gotten us to the point that we're asking someone to be an associate minister here. It was a lot longer than 3 months. It was more like 3 years. But there was intensive praying that went on. There was a great deal of conversation. But ultimately, the decision was put in God's hands. And God provided resources we had no idea about. More than adequate to get the job done. And so now, what can we do but follow God's leadership and be encouraged in our faith and encourage one another in that? And say, if God has done this, what's next for God to lead us into? What's next for God to provide the resources for? What's next that will be serving God as he wants in his time with his resources to accomplish his purposes and get his glory? We can encourage our leaders in these things, and we must. But you know, we can only encourage them if we're practicing them. And we can begin practicing them today, tonight even. And I encourage you to do that. But I want to encourage you in something first, even before that. And that is, if your walk with the Lord is not what it ought to be, change that first, tonight, and right now, as we stand and sing this song.